mein auf den Supercast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 385. I'm Adam, and any more trouble and I'll have you outside and set the dogs on you. And here's Kirby Bartlett Sloane.
Alas, poor skull.
Debbie Melrose.
I don't think these cows know anything about the time scanner.
Well, you took mine, Deb.
Oh, sorry.
And point deductive for Debbie for taking Mary's and Mary Lang.
Now you can see why they burnt witches.
That was on my list as well.
At some point this week, we're going to be looking at the image of the Thendal. But first, yes, Mary's back, and I believe allowed her the option, or opportunity even, to discuss her thoughts on the invisible enemy. So at this point, I'm going to switch my... No, I'm not, because I'll overdrown it. Carry on, I was going to make a cup of tea, but just carry on, Mary. I'm just going to lean back. Hang on, where's my priority jingle? Hang on, whoa, there. Sorry, let's get the protocols in place.
Oh, and well-deserved this time. Sit back, make some tea, listen to me, because I'm going to talk for a minute or so.
God.
I have a lot to say about the invisible enemy. Starting with, I found it entertaining just because it was so bad. Oh, my God. The sets were cheap, and I think IKEA cheap. The direction was awkward. I mean, how many times were people just kind of left standing around saying silly scientific pseudo-babble, interspersed with scenes in a boring hallway with little action? It seemed like we were always going back to that hallway. And did you see about how Leela was supposed to be doing that clever little roll across the hallway to reposition herself? Well, if anything could look more awkward, it was Louise Jameson trying to do that tumble across the hallway. What was I going to say? And although the acting in general was good, I think the actors were pretty much acting their little socks off. Tom Baker looked like he was bored with the whole thing. I mean, he seemed like he was, I don't know, checked out some of the times, and some of the comments he would make seemed off script. You know, they were comments about how bad things were going. And I read a story about how during this era of Doctor Who, that even in the read-throughs, he would get so disgusted with how things were that he would rip the scripts up, you know, and walk out of the room. And I wonder if this was one of them. he probably knew this was a half-baked story. And Leela, her character has changed from the fearless warrior huntress that she was originally. And this time she was like trembling, afraid to leave the TARDIS, talking about, you know, dark things happening. And especially like she needed to be almost dragged across that mind-brain divide, whatever mind-brain divide is. She had to be dragged across it because it was dark on the other side. And she's kind of, in this episode anyway, she's been turned into just another one of those gee whiz, ask questions of the doctor companion, and not some, you know, not this warrior huntress that I admired so much. Okay, and then there was, fillers. Talk about the fillers that wasted time. The time taken to make up the antidote to the virus that Leela had in her bloodstream. Of course, it was originally thought she was resistant because she didn't have the intellect of the doctor or others. But it turns out she had, you know, this thing in her bloodstream. And they spend almost a whole episode coming up with an antidote for everyone to, you know, to spread around. And then the doctor loses it in the first minute or two in his meetup with the commander. And then there was the other time waster. The lengthy discussion that the doctor has with the nucleus about the right of all living things to survive, even viruses, you know, which I thought was a very good discussion, only for the doctor to turn around and blow it all up in the end. He said, are we talking genocide? It all just smacks of time wasting, scene filling writing, and not anything that contributed to anything. And I'm going to make some enemies here. K-9. I think of K-9 as kind of the Marmite of Doctor Who. The Jar Jar Binks of Doctor Who. Some think he's cute, you know, or find him just lovable, and others, and I'm in this camp, find him just irritating and wish he would go away. He's got that high-pitched... He's got that voice. I mean, I'm sure Isla loves him, you know, and that he may have been brought along because, you know, the dads are getting to stare at Leela, you know, and that's okay. But I think that with the Hinchcliffe era, they were probably feeling they were losing the kids, so they had to bring something in. But he's got that annoying high-pitched voice and that snarky attitude, which wasn't as much on display in this episode as I know episodes to come. But I just want you to know, K-9 is not one of my faves. So that is my thoughts on that show.
Well, Mary, it's very, very interesting opinion.
Mastiff?
Yes?
Did Mary watch the same story we watched?
Why, did you all like it?
Yeah.
Yes. And your comments about K-9, of course, are... Well.
I do agree with you about the bit when they're in his mind and she is being dragged around. But I thought that was sort of implied that she was so terrified of the fear that, you know, the danger that was around them, that she was just basically almost blind with it.
Oh, but that's my point. You see, she's this warrior huntress. And what, even in the one we just saw, remember how she says to the doctor, you know, I'll protect you. That's more the Leela, not the scared, quavering, you know, I have to be dragged through things character that she was in the last story.
OK. Yeah, it's true.
I'm being shouted at that it's very loud, apparently, so I'm going to very turn it down a bit. Anyway. It's no louder than it normally
is. Just me, am I talking loud?
No. It's not any louder than it normally is. It's just awkwardness.
When I get emphatic, I get loud.
No, I didn't think it was that loud. Did you think it was that loud?
No.
Okay, right then. Okay, well, we've had some Lillian Robin who said, I noticed Kirby was at Japan Fest while I was yesterday. Never saw him. But it was very, very crowded. Well, unfortunately, Lillian, he only recognises you by your legs. So it would have been quite difficult for him to actually pick you up. But he did talk about it off air, didn't he, Kirby?
Yeah.
There you go. So, and now we're going to talk about the image of the Fendal. So after the title sequence, we get quite a long bit of plot feeder. Before we get to see the Doctor, obviously it starts with the skull, which is not the best looking prop ever, to be fair. But I think it's there for effect. And we immediately meet a load of sort of Doctor scientists. We know they're doctors and scientists because they're all wearing white coats.
yes.
Dead giveaway.
Yeah. I do particularly like the posh chap who I think is the only one who doesn't get done in out of the whole lot of them. I quite like his... What?
His name's Adam.
Yeah, Adam. Oh, I should have remembered that, shouldn't I? I should be able to remember it now for the rest of the link.
He's as posh as the other one.
He's not as posh as the other one.
Well, style the other one seemed posher to me.
No, his hair, I felt,
and he was better dressed.
He was just more arrogant. I think I quite liked his this character, Adam. I think he was quite fun. And, of course, the legend that is Wanda Ventham. Obviously, when I was a child, she was better known for playing a governor in a prison, if I seem to remember rightly. But bearing in mind that she'd only given birth to Benedict Cumberbatch a year before this was made, and she was in her 40s, that was quite an interesting fact, I thought. And not bad looking for a woman in her 40s anyway. Somehow I think that her lovely dark hair came out of a bottle. But nevertheless, quite a striking character, good old Wanda.
I just said she's very beautiful.
Yes, and I did look up as how Benedict came up with the name Cumberbatch, because his dad was called Carter Cumberbatch or something like that. But his dad, who was an actor, dropped the Cumberbatch but his actual name was actually Cumberbatch, because it does also, there's more information than his auto actor grandparents that were also called Cumberbatch. So it's just sort of as his dad felt that Cumberbatch was a bit of a mouthful for an actor's name. And he'd sort of be right, but we sort of quite used to saying it now.
I just like different ways of saying it that are all
Cabbage Patch.
Bandersnatch was my favourite one.
Nice.
Well, you notice how I what I used in my request for feedback.
No, I glossed over it.
The Mumberbatch.
Yeah. Cumbermum.
Oh, Cumbermum.
Yes, the whole... Behold the holy Cumbermum.
Yeah, Lillian Robin said, I was wearing a long skirt and anime leggings.
Anime.
Oh, anime leggings at Japan Fest. Well, that's probably why, Lillian. Laurie Nick says, by the way, nay ancient power of the Fendal, the Wi-Fi is working. Hi, folks. Hi, Laurie. And of course, then she says, of course, I can type now, which is great news. And Ashley Hughes has also joined for 5 minutes. Okay. All right, then. So moving on. And then Lillian's now talking to Laurie. Surely they could do that on the private. Never mind. All right. So, yeah, we have this skull, which is weird. And we have these interesting new characters. Max is the other chap that is there in that first scene as well. He's all right at the moment, isn't he? Just a bit miserable, they pointed out. Because Adam tells him to smile. He sort of, that's about the only time he does smile throughout the whole story.
Yes, pretty creepy too. Yeah.
And then we're in the creepy woods at night, and then some bloke's wandering around.
I got the vibes of American Werewolf in London with the guy walking through the woods.
Yes.
Yeah. And then we meet Dr. Fendelman, who I think he's still around, this actor, because I'm pretty sure he's seen quite a lot of stuff. But
yeah,
and he was quite.
He's in Red Dwarf.
Yeah, he's quite... That's right. Doesn't he play...
He plays Death.
Yeah, but he also plays George the... I think he plays one of the kings in... what's that thing called? Blackadder. I think he's in a Blackadder episode.
Yes, he's in it. He's Sir Talbot Buxomly.
That's the one.
That's
it, yes. Yeah. he was the Beetle in Blackadder's Christmas Carol.
So he's been around a bit, but it's funny that he looks, obviously he was quite young when this was made.
The first time he appears on screen, he doesn't have the accent.
Oh, I never noticed that. Debbie, I'm impressed.
Because I actually rewound the episode, because I was like, hang on, he didn't have the accent in a go, because it really just tweaked my, hang on, you know, that's not right.
Yeah. Ashley Hughes says hi.
Hi. Hi.
Laurie Nix has joined again. How that worked then? I think that this particular timeline indicator works particularly well. So we meet Fendelman in his big bank computer room with some little tiny computers. And some
you just activated bank. Alexa. Thank you.
And also, there's little computer monitors they've got in the room are quite interesting. Then Wanda Ventham, who plays, I can't remember her name. What's the woman's name?
Thea.
Yeah, she gets decides to have a night alone with a skull, and then the skull starts glowing, and she starts getting possessed. And they do this possessed thing by overlaying the skull against her face. Well, I suppose it's quite an interesting little graphic.
Yes.
Yeah, sort of. Although she's
they did spend rather a long time on that, didn't they?
Maybe because they were so pleased that they managed to get it to work. Apart from
they got to the point where I was like, "Yeah, we've seen that."
From the fact Wanda could have kept her head a bit stiller.
Another scene filler.
Yeah.
Mary. Anyway, back to the woods, and there's more of a while all this is going on, there's something happening in the woods, which I think is alluding to the fact that this bloke's under attack from some strange force, and. Of course, we quickly find out that Fendelman's a bit of a tyrant, not as much as Max, but Max isn't as much of a tyrant just yet, not until all this Fendel stuff starts kicking in. But anyway, then we're in the TARDIS. Poor old K-9's had his innards sort of pulled out, so because obviously these scenes, I think, were shot afterwards to show that they actually did have K-9 on the TARDIS, because when they originally did this episode, he wasn't in it. So they decided to have K-9 in Doctor Who. They had to shoot these scenes to indicate that he was there. Otherwise, it would seem a bit odd. But
and have you noticed how tarted up Leela is?
Yes. Is a bit, yeah. Although part of that, the explanation she had in one of the extras on the DVD was that she had had a bad haircut.
Oh.
And so that's why she stuck her hair up like that, because it just didn't match how she was in before.
Okay. Oh.
And then as they were doing as they were filming, it was growing enough that by the very end, you know, there's a scene where
she
lets it down again.
Yeah.
Okay. Somehow ends up back in the original costume.
Yeah, why the new costume?
I'm not sure.
I mean, when she's leaning over the TARDIS.
I know.
Yeah. I kept waiting for a wardrobe malfunction. I think the dads were too.
Yeah, it was good though. Especially a bit later on when the Doctor lands on top of her and she says, you're very heavy.
Yeah.
Tom must have enjoyed that scene at least. Anyway, so yeah, there's a little sort of scene, and then something starts going wrong in the TARDIS because the camera goes sideways, a bit sort of Batman. And and then it goes straight again because the Doctor sorts it out, and then the usual Doctor Leela banter.
The Leela doesn't believe the TARDIS can hear her, and then she's totally convinced the TARDIS.
I have an example coming up here. Here we go.
Earth.
Your ancestors have a talent for self-destruction that borders on genius.
Listen, Doctor, I do not like the way you keep talking about my ancestors.
I like your new dress.
Thank you.
I like your ancestors. Thank you.
No, you said, I like your new dress. She says, thank you.
I thought you said ancestors. Sorry. No,
I like your new dress.
Yeah, it was very muffled on my end.
Oh, shut up, you. I had to. I'm not allowed to have it too loud. I'm in trouble.
I want to speak to that. Is I didn't know if it was just the version that I could see, which I think was off DVDs. Not DVDs, I'm sorry, but VHS. Mm-hmm. But the sound throughout this whole thing for me seemed kind of muffled, and I had a hard time understanding.
Okay. It was on the version I watched, yeah.
Okay, I didn't notice it myself.
Deb would say that.
But you're probably right. If many of you thought the same thing, then you're probably right. So after that little...
I had no problem with my DVD copy.
I've got a DVD copy. That might be. They might have cleaned up the audio a little bit on that. Anyway, right.
And you can watch subtitles, which helps.
Well, I didn't watch subtitles, to be fair. But anyway, moving on. So after the little TARDIS scene, Thera's up having some breakfast while reading what looks like the Times. And Dr. Fendelman comes in and makes his breakfast. Then Max comes in.
Tomorrow's Times.
Shut up. I noticed also that he brings in a load of computer readouts, so huge. Of course, Adam's out walking the dog, I believe. Or is he just... Or is that the...
Yes.
Oh, yes, there's a dog. He finds a dog, but there's a dead body out there. Beg your pardon.
It's his dog. He's not old bones again. And, oh, it's a
cool... Oh, yeah. Good acting by the dog, though. I have to say that dog was good. What?
Master. The dog's name is referred to in the script as Leaky, as in Louis Leaky, the anthropologist. But a lot of people think that it means that the dog
had a weak bladder.
Okay.
Anyway, Laurie Nick says, can anyone recognize Fendelman's accent? Is that Spanish, German, Peter Law?
I think it's meant to be Spanish or Italian almost. That's about it. That's as far as I can
place. I thought it was German.
I thought it was German.
No, it sounded more Italian
than Spanish-y. Okay. Anyway, like I say, the dog finds the dead body. And, of course, that's when Adam comes in and panics a little bit and says, oh, we should call the police. And Fenderman's sort of saying, oh, well, no, but it's sort of... And then he orders a post-mortem. I didn't know you could just do that, just sort of randomly.
Yeah. Do a post-mortem. Fred and I were watching that and we're going, "What? Why don't they call the police or something?
Call the police, yeah.
But he puts his hands on, Fendelman puts his hands on Adam's shoulders and says, no, come on, Adam, blah, 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 blah. We'll sort this out ourselves. What was the problem? I find a dead body in the woods.
I had to report it rather quickly myself.
Yeah, I don't understand why they were... of course, then Fenelman's sort of given the sort of shifty looks and everything, which, of course, then, like I said before, it sort of implies that he's a bit of a, he's the baddie in this, or all this, you know, because he's got the name Fendelman. Anyway, the TARDIS lands, or materialises in a cow field, rather reminiscent of Invasion. But he doesn't, doesn't make the TARDIS invisible on this occasion. Now, that's gone right over the heads of Mary and Debbie, who probably can't remember Invasion, and the TARDIS, them landing in a cow field, and the TARDIS being made invisible, because it was probably a little bit too far.
I remember that.
You remember it, do you? Debbie's very quiet, so sure.
And I heard at the time that it was a reference back to a classic episode.
Yeah. Anyway, just trying to goad you lot, and it failed dismally. Leela, meanwhile, walks out of the TARDIS. Some very cute cows, aren't they? Just probably made a very good dinner out of them. So she walks out of the TARDIS with a knife out. So they're there. One of the rare sort of nice broad daylight scenes in this story. And then they come across... Faster. Hang on, I'm in... What? What?
This was... filmed at Stargrove again, Mick Jagger's estate.
Yes, we knew this.
Estate.
We mentioned this last week.
It's Mars. What?
We mentioned this last week.
Yes, well, I'm mentioning it this week because.
Yeah, because.
Why not?
Well, good question. I ask the questions in this show, but never mind. Yeah, so Lillian Robin says generic foreign accent. That's just Kirby's accent, Lillian. It's foreign, but it's not generic. It's just Kirby. And so the Doctor and Leela find... the Doctor's having a nap, actually, under a tree, and Leela attacks this bloke on a bike. And this is how they... This leads up to them heading towards a grandma's house. So like something out of The Three Little Pigs, isn't it?
This guy's name, they always refer to him by his first and last name. Always. Ted Moss.
Oh, yeah. Maybe there's loads of Mosses around. I don't know. But no, I would say this reminds, that sort of scene reminds me of, the Little Red Riding Hood, because they're at grandma's house. I said Three Little Pigs, but there's a... Oh, never mind. There's a big bad wolf in that as well, isn't he? So then we meet a friend of me. I was going to say the show. I don't think I did an interview with Derek Martin, but I did certainly meet him, and he's a very nice chap. Who said my quote, which was about the set the dog onto you. Not a very nice thing to say, a little old lady. I'm going to set the dog onto you, but she wasn't intimidated by the dog at all. In fact, we never saw the dog, which is ironic, considering we did see Adam's dog. It'd be nice to have seen this ferocious dog. I'm surprised no Doctor Who fans have edited in a scene of a little chihuahua tucked in the corner somewhere. I'm going to turn the kettle on. I'm sorry, I'm going to turn my tea's made on now because you didn't actually laugh at that joke.
I'm sorry if you hear a bit of movement. I'm moving downstairs.
Oh, how interesting. Right. The security guard's not particularly impressed with the grandma, who's obviously... not impressed with a load of other stuff. I can't even remember what she's not impressed with, actually, initially. Why isn't she...
She's not impressed with the security man.
Oh, she's just having an argument with him. But they're obviously not impressed with each other. You know, that's really weird. Anyway, so... that's moving on a little bit. Things got stuck. So... Thea seems to be all right after a little episode, for a little while at least. And then she... She sort of turns on the power without even thinking.
She wanders in and finds the lab and automatically knows which the on switch.
Yeah, it's because the Fendar thing is slightly in her mind, so that's what he wants her to do. So he turns on the power, and when she turns on the power, she zones out, and the Doctor is in the... Suddenly it's night time. It's in the forest, and all these weird things are happening. There's obviously a Fendel thingamajig attacking him, and Leela's got into the house. And it's all very spooky, and that's the end of the episode. And you think, bloody hell's going on here? Dean Hill's joined our viewership, probably about 30 seconds before he realises he's on the wrong podcast. But hello, Dean. Anyway, right then. So yeah, like I say, that's right, because Leela tries to get in through the door, and someone fires a gun off. And of course, that's why we see some tarot cards. Because isn't the little old lady? She's a bit of a tarot card reader, isn't she? No.
Yes.
Oh, she is good. I'm glad someone agreed with me. Ted Moss is the one that had the gun you know, shooting at Leela. So she comes in. So she has another go at him. She just pulled him off his bike and threatened him with a knife. Now she's pulled a gun on him, or his gun on him.
Yes, yeah, she has, yeah.
And then that bloke from Coronation Street walks in. And pretends that he's got a gun by poking his stick into her back. Ooh, misses. But she falls for that trick, unfortunately. And meanwhile, yeah, so Adam goes into the lab and finds a possessed Thea. And I have to say, even though Wanda Ventham's a fantastic actress, she's not a patch on Elizabeth Sladen's ability to do possessed acting. So we then see a scene of Derek Martin's character having a cup of something. It's the smallest mug ever. I don't know what he was drinking out of it. Maybe it was a espresso, which we didn't have in those days in Britain.
Just in general, I noticed, you know, like the teapot and is very small and all the cups are kind of on the small side.
Yeah, well, this particular cup that he was drinking out of, he was holding it with two fingers. And
really,
I know the only coffee you could buy in the 70s in Great Britain was essentially Nescafe. That was it. There wasn't any other proper coffee available. Obviously, more recently, there's coffee shops everywhere. In fact, every other shop in Cowes High Street is a coffee shop, isn't it, Debbie?
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, maybe it was
Starbucks, right?
Oh.
No, we haven't got Starbucks.
We've got Costa.
Cowes.
Costa and M&S and loads of other private ones, haven't we, Deb? Tiffin's is one.
Yes, lots of them.
Tiffin's. I love Tiffin's bacon rolls. They're fantastic. Moving back to Doctor Who. Anyway, yeah, so something is inside Derek Martin's little...
Sorry.
Oh, dear. Derek Martin's office. Adam manages to get Thea out of her trance. Derek Martin's character is killed. And Thea feels slightly responsible. And then the Doctor just wanders in, and Thea's lying on the floor, and she starts glowing. She must have had ready bread for breakfast. We did discuss her breakfast earlier on. And if anybody remembers the old ready bread adverts, everybody became radioactive after eating ready bread. And clearly that's what's happened to Thea here. And then while she's sat there, these...
It's gone over the heads of all the Americans, have no idea what you're
talking about. Oh, come on, you're
an
anglophile, don't give me that.
I'll find a picture and post it on the page.
No, just Google... Sorry, let's go on YouTube.
I'm doing it.
Classic Ready Brick adverts. Anyway, yeah, so while she's lying there glowing away, these little strange sort of S-shaped worms with strange little tentacles coming out of their mouths appear. In fact, they look slightly cobra-ish, don't they? I suppose that's what they're designed to look at.
Hello. Many,
the tease maid's doing some funny things at the moment.
Ooh.
I was just a bit alarmed there because some hot water was coming out the top of it. It's not really supposed to do that. I think I might have overfilled it slightly. Yes. It's okay now, but it was making noises it doesn't normally make. So I apologise for that to listeners and viewers. It's very important I get a cup of tea at this point, but usually not quite as dangerous as that. I was half expecting it to blow up at that point. Anyway, back to the episode. Sorry, was anybody going to say something then while I was going on about tea?
But I forgot what we were talking about.
Well, that's a bonus. Right, anyway, so the Fendalines, little embryonic Fendalines, as we find them out to be later, were like cobras. Yes, he's going to completely sort of discredit my comments.
In the making of documentary, the little wings on the Fendal creatures are there because they were originally not, and it's made them a little bit too suggestive looking.
Oh, okay. All right, so Laurie Nick says, Mar Tyler calls the security gay, a Swede-bashing cretin. No idea what she means, but love it. And then Laurie Nick says, is that a backhanded way of saying fascist? Well, he was wearing a very fascist uniform, wasn't he? Mm. Right, so yeah, the Doctor just wanders in and immediately makes friends of everybody and is accepted once again. Stranger, sort of accepted, shall we say. And they've got another dead body on their hands. At this point now, with Max acting very strangely, Dr. Vendelman is looking a little bit less like the baddie. So anyway, you find out the bloke from Coronation Street is actually the grandson of the old lady Ma Tyler. Now, we did discuss this previous time we looked at Image of the Fendal, whether Ma Tyler was some relation to Rose somewhere along the line. But unfortunately, in Doctor Who, there's been so many Tylers. I could get rich. Yes, we have. I could get rich on the various Tylers we've had in Doctor Who over the years. I beg your pardon?
I maintain.
You maintain
the listing of shows.
You do?
And we've never done Image of the Fendal.
Well, I've watched it many a time. I just assumed we had. That's a shame. I haven't got any questions on it. So that's that means, of course, we resort to this. The good old faithful Trivial Pursuit questions. Well, Debbie promised, actually, that she'd write the questions for certain stories.
Which that's right.
Didn't say to write them for this one.
No, well, I'm struggling for time.
I'm just supposed to write them for this.
Yeah, but I'm struggling for time.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll do the next ones then, if you like.
Well, what is the next story? Don't play tunes at me.
I'm trying to say.
Sunmakers.
I've probably already done Sunmakers, probably would have got them. Anyway, back to the story.
Yes, we've done Sunmakers.
Yes,
definitely.
I've probably got questions for that. Yeah. So very well coming. I'll do the next one for you when I've already done it.
The one after it, then.
Ooh, maybe so. What's the next one?
Underworld, which we've done.
We've done it. Yeah. I've got questions for that, Debbie.
Yeah, we have questions for that one.
Yeah, we've done Underworld.
Yeah,
the next one has been done, but it was done way before you had any questions. Invasion of Time.
Want us to get that far that quick. I want us to, we might have to do a delay so as we can get the new series started. Louise Jameson's last story is the Invasion of Time, and I want to try and get her on the show before we actually come to the end of her era on the show. Anyway, back to this story.
If I may point out, when we get into the Key to Time season, we've only done two of those.
Oh. Wow. Back to this one. Anyway, right, so I was just alluding to the fact that the bloke from Coronation Street, it was Tyler's grandson. So there's lots of... I will phone the police after all scenarios, but someone's severed the connection. And we get some great...
How convenient.
What? Beg your pardon?
How convenient.
How convenient. And also gives them, obviously, Adams the opportunity to come up with some funny little quips. This point, Thea starts getting a bit paranoid, and she does look at the skull quite a lot. And Fendelman has a gun. Very scary then. Of course, there's a point in which Ma Tyler goes into a strange trance as well. I'm just moving forward a bit here.
She encountered the creature in the woods.
Yeah, but it didn't kill her. That's right. So she goes off on one.
He's in a weird psychic trance. Yeah.
They examine the X-rays of the skull, which I think they imply that the X-rays are what triggered it or brought it start bringing it back to life. And there's a badly drawn star on its head.
It's a pentagram.
Yeah, which is a pentagram. Last time I looked, Kirby, was a star.
Right. Yes, specifically it's meant to look this way for the whole adult.
The star could be six-pointed or five-pointed.
Thank you. That's very true, Mary. I'm not going to dispute that. But if I was going to draw a star, it would look like this. But I'd draw it slightly better than they've done on this particular X-ray.
Well, these are skull fragments, so...
It's supposed to be actually... This is actually part of the skull. That's what they're trying to say.
He's quite fussy about a skull fragment.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, he's sort of a bit confusing, this Fendelman bloke. One minute he's sort of quite normal. Next minute he seems like he's sort of on the side of the Fendal. So it's a bit weird, that bit inconsistent. And then, of course... Old Thea walks back in and stares at the X-ray. Then Creepy Max comes in behind her and locks her in. And do you know, Creepy Max reminded me of somebody. I can't remember who it was. It was very sort of a typical sort of... If we ever come across the character he reminds me of again in Doctor Who, I'll say, there we are, Creepy Max. Anyway, so he sort of essentially assaults Thea, and the Doctor just wanders in and offers the skull a jelly baby. In fact, it wasn't even a jelly baby, was it? It was a licorice allsort.
That's right.
So why?
Yeah.
Did he say?
No,
I don't
know.
No, because it's a licorice allsort, and I can't stand licorice allsort.
This happens several times. They end up using allsorts and calling them jelly babies several times in the next couple of seasons.
No.
For some reason.
Probably because they couldn't get the hand on jelly babies.
Makes licorice better than...
No, those are revolting. And the only licorice allsorts I like...
I think I read someplace...
Right, point deducted for Kirby for not allowing me to say what licorice allsorts are like. Yeah, go on in, Kirby.
I believe that... I read someplace, or might have been in some of the extras for Pirate Planet, because there's a whole lot of all sorts being called.
Pirate Planet. He scatters a load of jelly babies on the bonnet of a spaceship, but they were jelly babies.
Yeah, but I believe they're all sorts actually. If you look at them, we'll get there in a few.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Anyway,
I think I might have noticed that one, but you might be right.
The story I think I remember is that they did not check to see if anyone had any jelly babies and had to go down to the store quickly, and they didn't
something
have
any like jelly babies.
They didn't have any, so they just got the nearest thing they could get.
Whatever. Anyway, right, so the doctor offers the skull a jelly, and then he starts going a bit funny. He gets sort of taken over a little bit and puts his hand on the skull and goes, "Aah!"
Why did he do that?
Because his mind was sort of taken over psychically. Did not realise that, did he?
Yes, but I'm still like, why did he touch it after, you know, he's usually quite cautious about these things.
Yes.
I wondered too, you know, the doc was acting not like the doc.
So, while this is all happening, Leela is poking around the house and she can hear screams and that, and she comes into the room, and this is where, of course, she kicks his chair away because she's not allowed to touch the doctor because then she could get taken over by it. She kicks the chair away and the doctor ends up on top of her. And she says, "You're very heavy." It was a nice shot of her cleavage from that angle, to be fair. and then she says, does that mean I saved your life? And the doctor says, "Yes." And so then sort of... So, there's a countdown on one of the computers, isn't there, that says 98, 56, 46, unless that shows a reading.
The doctor said in the cottage that they had 100 hours to sort this out.
So it just happens to be on the computer screen. So, meanwhile, Max has a gun now, and he's got Thea tied down in some sanctum of some variety.
It's the cellar.
Oh, but cellar's usually the sanctums in stories like this, aren't they? And like I say, Tyler is out of it. The doctor's got a different hat, I noticed, and it's sort of more like a cowboy's hat in this story. And then Max comes in and threatens the boys with his gun, and he sort of basically carts them down to the cellar and ties them up. And now, there's a point in which it's coming up soon in which makes me think we have actually done this story, Kirby, and I'll explain when we get to it in a minute. So the doctor manages to, after saying that Mar Tyler's gone, what did he say? He mentioned something and that brought about. It was tea, wasn't it? Something.
Yeah, he was doing the recipe for a fruitcake and he was doing it wrong.
Yeah.
He's like, "That's not how you make a fruitcake."
Yeah, and then she's suddenly back with us. And
you botch up a recipe, so help you.
So Max ties Adam and Fendelman to some pillars, this is the point we know that Fendelman isn't a baddie, and there's a point later on, of course, when he realizes that his whole family through the history of time have been used, although I don't think millions of years ago they would have kept the name Fendelman all the way through there, but there you go. There's also the doctor and Leela go back to the TARDIS.
They go to look for the fifth planet, don't they?
Yeah.
Yes.
And then something happens and Leela ends up lying on the floor.
Another time waster.
Steady on, Mary, steady on. Anyway, so Leela ends up on the floor with a beautiful camera angle, has to be said. with a badly strategically placed skirt covering up, or should we say, not quite covering up, something it should be covering up, shall we say. So thank you for the choice of camera angle, and she's very careful when she gets up not to... It reminded me a little bit of...
Very delicate about that, wasn't she?
But do you remember when Joe had a certain garment on which wasn't covered up so well?
Because I don't think she was nearly as careful about what she was doing.
No. Anyway, so the Dr. Mar, while he's in the TARDIS, opens up the view screen and we see this green thing. I'm not quite sure what it's supposed to be. And
I believe it's the fact that the Time Lords blew the planet up was time-locked.
Oh, well done, Kirby.
It's just a weird image of the... He recognises it straight away as being a...
Go on, then.
Yay!
As you helped me out of a hole. So they decide quite quickly they need to get back to Earth as quickly as possible. And for the second story running, the Doctor is able to get the TARDIS to drop him back exactly where he needs to at the right time.
The thing is, to get back as quickly as possible, it's a time machine. He could have gotten back before any of this started.
Yes.
Yeah, he was worried about being late. Yeah.
So why didn't he go in there a few minutes before?
Yeah, because he can't cross his own timeline, and it's not in the script.
So, what's going on about the time loop at that point?
Yes, the time loop. I thought, hang on, they're going to do time loops soon.
One of the first major mentions of it,
I think.
Yeah,
because they're going to do the time loop later on in this series, this particular series of Doctor Who. We'll talk about that later. Okay, so poor old Thea is tied to the floor. Fendelman is moaning like buggery, and then he really does moan about the fact that his family's been used since time, and then we hear a bang.
Now
this is what makes me think we've done it before, because I'm pretty sure I've mentioned that is one of the most violent scenes that they've ever, even though you don't actually see the shooting, physical shooting of, the gun's gone off and he's got a hole in his head and he's lying there with blood running. That is one of the most violent things they've had in Doctor Who so far. Yes, Kirby.
As well.
Master, yes, we have discussed that before. In passing.
Oh, have we?
And then said, oh, and we'll get further into it when we actually watch the story.
Mm-hmm.
If you say so. Anyway, but yes, it is. I mean, I don't. You lot probably disagree with me because you always do. But when I first saw
this
that,
this is pretty grim.
It is grim, and that guy
committed
in a minute as well. That's grim. That's really the way the Doctor hands the gun to him. Like, yeah, go on then. It's like whoa.
Yeah.
And apparently they even were I believe the script, the original script, I read this someplace, said that when, what's the guy's name who kills himself?
He killed himself? I thought some...
No, come on. When they're all under control, when Thea's turned, we've gone ahead of ourselves. Cause
in the next episode when...
Why are we jumping to the next episode, you naughty boy? Name.
Stale.
Yeah.
Yeah, when he
that's it. When the Doctor just hands him the gun, it's like
rather than him shooting himself off camera completely, he actually was supposed to put the gun's barrel in his mouth and then they cut.
Oh.
No.
Yeah. No, but they may well have initially decided to do that. But what I'm saying is, even though you don't see it, the fact that he's dead there with a hole in his head, that's the most violent thing. I mean, obviously, I watched this for the first time probably in my early 20s. It didn't shock me that much, but knowing it's Doctor Who, I did get a feeling, whew, wow, that was pretty strong.
Yeah.
For what this was at 5:30 in the evening after Grandstand. On a Saturday evening, which was probably going to be mainly children watching, I thought that was quite strong. I wouldn't say don't put it on, but I thought that would have
Mary
maybe
Whitehouse
got
I'm glad probably I had a lot to say about it.
I'm glad I didn't watch this one with Isla, to be honest.
Yeah. Anyway, so so Max has really gone berserk. And of course, Thea's lying down in this pentagon thing that starts glowing, which is quite a good effect. And then she starts sort of transforming. And then we see humongous Fendel creature in the hallway. And nobody can move. They're all frozen to the spot. And that's the end of that.
You know what I was thinking?
What?
And they all said that.
What?
I was thinking, my veals. I can't move my veals.
Okay.
Well, at least Deb gets it.
I got it.
Anyway, so the Doctor comes in and he persuades them to move, and he shoots the Fendel creature while Thea converts into this sort of rather attractive sort of golden, looks like a figurehead of a ship.
I love the way they do her eyes, just with her eyes closed. Yeah. I think that's so effective.
It's very, very good. And of course, she starts blasting people and turning them into little Fendel creatures. And then Max suddenly says, oh, this is not the way it's supposed to be, which is a bit of a weird transformation. He must have known there was something going on somewhere along the line and suddenly decides that that's not the way it's
these
supposed to be.
These coven leaders never figure it out until, you know, the full manifestation of what they've brought.
And there's a lovely... There's a lovely line from, hang on, if I can capture it, from the grand woman. I'll just have turned it up so you can hear it. Turn it up. Here we go. This bit here.
All right, Brad.
You know something, John? There's going to come a time when I'll be too old for this sort of thing.
Yes! Too old for this sort of thing.
I know how she feels.
Yes. Yeah. This is after Star Wars, so she nicked that line from Han Solo, from Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah. Anyway, so old Wanda's doing her sort of, doesn't have to do much speaking now. She's wafting her arms around a bit and looking.
Yeah, she's on the making of documentary quite a bit discussing this. She said that she had difficulty keeping her eyes closed and keeping her balance with all this.
Well, I'm quite interested. Sorry to interrupt you. I interrupted Kirby, everybody.
Oh, no.
Obviously, where she was a mother of a young baby, I wonder if Benedict Cumberbatch was actually on the set somewhere during the making of this. That would have been quite cool to think, wouldn't it?
She also said that she had tried to get the role of... from...
Leela?
No, she tried to get the role in the James Bond movie where they painted...
Yeah, the
woman.
Goldfinger.
Yeah.
We all said Goldfinger. That was quite a good going.
She didn't get it, but she was glad to get this and be painted gold.
Oh, good. Well, that is good. Well, they should have cast. They should have cast a baby into the story somewhere, so we could have had baby Benedict on it. That would have been so cool. Anyway, right. So the doctor manages to creep in while Thea, I suppose you have to still call her Thea, is wafting her arms around and saves Adam.
Well, they call her the Kupendal Core, don't they, at some point?
Yeah,
she's
like
the
that.
Core.
Yeah. Max has gone completely the opposite way, rather bizarrely, and the doctor gives him a gun, and you hear a bang, and you know, that's the end of Max. There's a point in which also that Adam's there, and Leela threatens Adam with her knife. And it's most a scene of Leela's knife for quite a few stories, actually, fair enough.
Yes.
She just wave it around quite a lot in this story. So the doctor, we've now established that they don't like salt, these creatures, and they certainly don't like being shot with rock salt. So the plan is, because obviously we did see, and I glossed over this, that to keep everybody safe, the Gran was giving people bags of rock salt earlier on in the story. So,
it's an actual, you know, legitimate charm in the old ways, shall we say.
Old ways. Everybody gets given some rock salt. We see lots of little Fendal creatures appearing everywhere. And, of course, Thea appears from some very strange poses in corridors.
Oh, my God, what is that?
The pose?
On the face thing with the veil. I don't get that bit.
I don't know. Maybe it's just a cute thing. Leela shuts her eyes and shoots the creature and kills it. And of course, the doctor made a reference to back to marksman or lucky shots or something. I can't remember what he's going on about.
There's no such thing as a lucky shot or something. You know, it's all about.
And there was such thing as a lucky shot. Maybe the veil thing is she's protecting herself from the shot. I don't know. But anyway, Leela's seen as unconscious yet again. Which gives the doctor a chance to get his hands on her torso, and off they trundle.
And I like when he checks, asks her if she's okay, and she says yes, and then he just basically drops her.
Drops her. The look on her face.
At first I thought that was an ad lib. No, they worked that out in advance.
I thought that was brilliant.
Yes.
So I do believe the doctor's
idea. Louise Jameson talks about that on the documentary.
Oh, by the way, before I move on to the next bit, earlier on in this particular episode of the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, I got interrupted by Kirby when I wanted to explain what the nicest licorice all sorts were. So, and because nobody decided to actually remind me that that's what I was going to talk about, points deducted all round.
The bits around it, you know, the bit, the sort of the fondant bit around it. About? Rest, throw away.
Are you trying to interrupt me talking about my favourite licorice all sort again, Debbie?
Yeah, go on, deduct.
Right, for once and for all, the only ones I actually like out of the licorice all sorts packs are the little actual licorice roundels with the little blue little balls on, which you actually see on the licorice all sort man that was in Doctor Who, funny enough. They're sort of blue.
Oh,
they're black licorice covered in these tiny little blue bits of candy.
Oh, they're the worst.
No, they're not.
I think I've had them and they're pretty good too.
Thank you, Kirby. Yeah. Right. Thank you, Kirby.
Form.
Well done.
Is it massive? Yes. In any form.
No, I don't.
You may have noticed that.
Will you stop talking over it? Right. Points deducted all round. You're all talking over each other. Right. Apart from Kirby, who was trying to talk to me.
Right. Yeah, but
I don't know if you noticed yet, but I made a Goon Show reference in the comments for the request for feedback. But I also would like to make another Goon Show comment here.
God.
You know what?
You're encouraging him, Adam.
No, I'm bloody not.
You know what Blue Bottle's mother says about licorice?
No.
Licorice gives you a good run for the money.
Really worth interrupting the episode for that. Right then. So the Doctor plans.
How many Americans do you know who can quote?
I don't care.
Is this a joke?
Right. Anyway, so the Doctor plans to blow everything up, and they all basically plant salt everywhere, rock salt, whatever, and they leg it. Essentially, got 3 minutes to get out, and boom. And as soon as everything's sort of boomed and cured, the doctor doesn't hang around to see if everything's actually really is okay. He just buggers off in his TARDIS. That was it.
he also grabs the skull.
Does he? I didn't see that bit.
At the end, he's saying he's going to put it into a supernova.
Oh, good. I like that bit. I'm not going to get any points for that, but I like that bit.
And one of the interesting things about the skull, when he grabs it, it means they had to make a second skull prop. Ah. The first skull prop was lit from the inside, but they couldn't do that if he lifts it off.
Oh.
So the second skull prop is covered in that same reflective stuff where if you shine a light on it, it reflects right back straight into the camera.
Anyway.
So it's really cool.
Anyway. Right. Before we finish, stop putting me off because I've just realised lots of comments have come through on the thread. Right then. Ben Shoveler joined and then he said, boo, new series. Well, Ben, we're not doing new series. Not yet, anyway. Laurie Nick said, Ben! Oh, isn't that nice? And then Ben Shoveler replying to Laurie said, shh. Laurie Nick said, yay! And Laurie Nick said, move along, nothing to see here. And then replying to Laurie, Ben Shoveler said, I'm observing.
You
should actually be on the show, Ben. But there you go. Right, so what else we got here? Laurie Nix with a thumbs up. Ian Kirk joined. Alan T. Butcher, time loops go back to the claws of Axos. Good point, Alan. If you were here, you'd get one of these. But you're not, so you don't. And Laurie Nix said, Mrs. Tyler is my idol.
She's amazing, isn't she?
She's pretty good. Yeah. She's pretty good.
Yeah, she's their character in
what?
This.
Now?
Is Alan coming to Island Con?
You have to ask him. Alan, are you coming to Island Con? Right then, now Mr. Ben Shoveler, you have an opportunity here to come on the show. Yes, you don't have to have watched the image of the Fendal, you just have to be Ben. So there you go. I've said it, haven't I? Right, I'll have a sip out of my TARDIS mug.
Now I forgot what I was going to say.
Get in! Oh, brilliant, that's really made my show.
He didn't get a point for that.
No, he doesn't get a point. I should get a point for that. Fantastic. Anyway, back to the end of the episode. Right then, so like we say, Leela's hair's now down and looks like it's been brushed quite nicely. And she's changed into her other outfit. And, and then the canine nods his head.
Is this the only story where she's in this outfit?
I don't know, but I think she does wear it later. Okay. Pretty sure she wears it in the Invasion or... Sorry.
Invasion of Time?
That's
probably
the one. Yeah, I think she does. I've got a burp coming.
Uh-oh.
Didn't let it out properly. I'm very professional. Big pardon?
Oh, T-Bucks.
Yep.
Master, what? I now remember what I wanted to say. You haven't looked on Facebook page yet, but Lori Nix put out two really cool little videos with dealing with tea and tarot cards.
Okay, now I love those. They're brilliant.
Splendid. I haven't seen them yet, but thank you very much, Laurie. Right then, now I'm going to talk about what I think of the episode. Right. When I first saw the image of the Vendar, one, I was quite excited because we saw a bit of cane on it. Two, I'd never seen it before, and I was obviously in the mid-20s, so it was something quite new for me. I loved the spookiness of it. I love some of the dialogue, the performances, stuff like that. Didn't love the Fendal creatures very much. But having watched, I actually thought it was really, really good. But having watched it a few times since, obviously you can see little things in it. You think, why would you do that? And things like that. But I'm watching it and thinking, am I enjoying this story? And yes, I am enjoying the story. So I'm not thinking, oh, God, I've got to sit through that one. You know, if Image of the Fendar comes up on my list of viewings, I'm quite happy to watch it. So under those circumstances, I'd have to say it's not brilliant. It's one of those meh sort of middle of the road stories, which isn't too bad. You know, it's certainly not perfect Doctor Who. It's certainly not brilliantly written as some of the stories we've reviewed recently. But I actually think it's quite good. I'm very unfussy when it comes to Doctor Who. So, you know, if it's something that I say is rubbish, it really isn't very good at all. But this one isn't too bad. What did you think of it, Kirby?
I've now seen Image of the Fendal twice. Once in 1981 and then last week. And my memories of it were better than my recent viewing. But it wasn't bad. It's just that it wasn't as good as I remembered it when I was like 21 years old.
I can see how you'd see that, actually. It's like me and the tripods.
It was...
And the $6 Million Man, Debbie. $6 Million Man was my favourite series in the late 70s. In fact, I loved it so much I used to walk to school in slow motion. Absolutely adored that program.
I used to go...
I was looking at anything. I loved that program.
Anyway,
we got it on video and it wasn't as good as I remembered it to be.
Anyway, the thing about this story was it started out so darn slow. Fred and I watched parts one and two one evening, and I was kind of reluctant to continue because I was thinking it was going to be as slow as it was. And then we got into part three and part four, and my enthusiasm increased. I really liked parts three and part four.
Yeah, so it started getting somewhere.
Start getting good.
Gain a little momentum.
So it's very average to me because it was for the first half and really good for the second half. I didn't have any problems with the Fendal creatures themselves because I remembered them from 1981. So
grief, that was a bit.
So average.
Thank you, Kirby. I think we got there in the end of just saying average, apart from all the blurb we came out with, we'd have covered it quite nicely. Right then. Ben Shulliver says, shut up. Oh, I heard myself. Shutting myself up. That's very unusual. Ben Shulliver says, no, but you mentioned it. Hey, I'm here. Well, come on the show. Oh, can I? Does that mean you're going to Skype in then, Ben? Right then, Alan T. Butcher said, Alan is certainly coming to IslandCon. Woohoo!
Yay!
Well, we're going to have to play this one. Here we go.
Brilliant. Brilliant news. Looking forward to seeing you again, Alan. Oh, it's going to be fun.
Oh, bugger! I clicked on the background window and stopped the music. I'll play it again. Oh, no. sometimes things go wrong when you don't want them to. Right then. Ben Shavler says maybe. Right, am I going to Skype you in, Ben, or not? Answer the question. It's moving on. Right then. So who are we going to have next? Debbie Melrose. Have you seen this story before?
No.
Right. Debbie Melrose, what do you think of Image of the Fendal?
Started off very slow.
I said that.
Yes, you did. So, yeah, well, I'll just say average as well, then you can move on. But Yeah, I wasn't sure if I was going to really enjoy this. I mean, I liked the build-up and the atmosphere, and then we spent ages on that dissolve between the skull and Thea, and it just went on, and then we had a generic yokels, and it was just like, please don't be just another silly Doctor Who, you know, where we just take the mickey out of the yokel locals. And then suddenly, you know, episode 2 or 3 got really dark with the shooting and all the whole idea of the possession and, you know, these animals turning up. And, of course, they were a little bit better than last week's prawn, but it was...
Not that much better, to be fair, though.
But I did like the whole idea of them being... Oh, my cat's decided, because I'm talking, that she should come and shout at me. All right, shut up.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
And, yeah, I just... You've lost my train of thought, Maya, please. And I found towards the end, I was just like, oh my goodness, how is this going to end? It got really exciting. If they'd held that momentum for the whole 4 episodes, this would have been up there as one of my favourites, because I love things a little bit dark, because the last 2 episodes really saved it. But because of the build-up, the slow build-up to the whole, you know, the whole basically getting down to the cellar and getting on with it, unfortunately, it became an average for me, but I will certainly watch it again. But I might just skip to the last two episodes. Good acting and average, though. Unfortunately.
Very diplomatic of you, Debbie. You were just worried about having points deducted, weren't you, really?
No, not at all. I've just been trying for the past couple of days trying to work out what I can really say.
Well, okay. I don't know what you're trying to imply, but there you go.
I really enjoyed the last 2 episodes, but didn't enjoy the first 2. So I've been trying to work out what.
I enjoyed all of it, especially Wanda Ventham. I think the fact she's in it sort of made it quite viewable for me. Not the fact she's a eye candy. I just find a screen presence quite. Bear in mind she was in Time of the Rani, and she's a bit older then. I still think she's got a presence to her.
I'm looking forward
screen.
To that, because I've not seen that.
You're looking forward to Time and the Rani. Oh, dear.
I've heard things.
I wouldn't look forward to it too much, Debbie.
I've heard so many differing views about it that I'm looking forward to seeing it, just to see, you know.
Okay, well, what I would suggest you do is wear earplugs, because unfortunately Bonnie Langford does tend to scream through most of the story. All right, then, and here we go, ladies and gentlemen. It's a double whammy for you here on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast. It's Mary.
Yay!
Well, my lead-off comment is going to be from a prawn monster to a Chinese dragon. When that thing first appeared, that's what I thought. Oh, my goodness, now we have a Chinese dragon. Well, for me, this was a big improvement over The Invisible Enemy. As my lengthy, you know, negativity, I think, probably made evident. and I agree with Deb and with Kirby that the first 2 episodes do seem to drag on. And there do seem to be these filler, you know, which is a big problem with Doctor Who. But one thing that I wondered about is if everything about the Fendal and the fifth planet and all this stuff has been erased. It's not even in the TARDIS archives at all. How is it the Doctor knows so much about them? Because he doesn't talk about having had any direct, you know, contact with
them. He said it was a legend.
Well, it might be a legend, but if Time Lords were involved, you think there would be something in the TARDIS databanks. For me, like I said, things were kind of dull in episodes 1 and 2, but episode 3 just seems to jump all over the place. I was confused as to where are we now? What's going on now? We're dropping things that are not explained. Like they mentioned those blisters at the base of the skulls. It's like, okay, what about those?
Yeah,
they don't know anything about that. And I found it amusing that after the long computer sign-in thing that Fendelman and Max do, that Thea can wander in and turn one knob and everything's on and working, and she's possessed. I wonder, too, about the sudden appearance of Leela asleep on the TARDIS control room floor. Like, when did that happen? Because in the scene before, she doesn't look at all sleepy. And something else I found kind of amusing is that this is a story that only around the edges seems to involve the Doctor and Leela. they're not involved in the story at all in the whole first episode. And then second episode, he gets locked in that room with the boxes. And, of course, then we have the mystery of who unlocked the door. It's never explained or anything.
It is.
It is?
What?
Yeah, it's he makes a comment about the sonic screwdriver. He used the sonic screwdriver to do it, but the sonic was just slow.
He says that? I don't think he says it anywhere. I think that's just an assumption that people are making.
I just
phone's still ringing.
Another thing I found amusing is that I felt like this is Doctor Who invading a late 70s British comedy drama. All of the cozy little cottage atmosphere and it being in a priory. Hold on a second.
What was that?
What is that?
I think Mary's phone was ringing.
Yeah, and the answering machine was playing very loudly. Yeah. So I
what's
just
an
shut
answer?
It off. Anyway, you know, so I felt like, oh, you know, this is just this cozy little British comedy going to happen here, you know, because the sets were all, you know, very typical of comedies and dramas of that era. And then Fendall is never explained. There, you know, Thea becomes the data or the Fendall core, and these little squirmy things are all the Fendaline, but there's no explanations to what the Fendall really is. And the last thing that I have to say is I'm curious about why the doctor takes the skull away from the explosion that's going to happen with the Priory, because that's going to get sucked into a space-time like erasure, like nothing ever happened. So why not let the skull go that way too? Why take it, you know, away?
He said it was because it could have bounced anywhere in time and it could start again.
So being erased means it can still bounce somewhere in time?
Because he said it wouldn't be destroyed by it at all. It would just end up somewhere.
Okay, well, because he was critical of the Time Lords for throwing the skull into, you know, where they threw it, you know, so he's going to take it and throw it into another constellation. And so I think that's just as bad. But anyway, overall, I did find it more interesting, more entertaining than the last story. But I probably would have to have someone drag me kicking into watching it again.
Oh, that's a bit harsh, but okay. Thank you very much indeed. Oh, good grief. Mary, sorry, I just know something's come through on the thread. Anity Butcher says, Reese Barton, Book of Excuses, number 67678. Sorry, I am late. I was walking in slow motion because I like the $6 million man. He's taking the out of me a little bit there. Lena Robin says, I enjoyed the story overall, a bit better than average. The first two episodes were not slow, they were character development. Thank you very much, Lillian. Certainly deserves one of those. Ben Shoveler says, can't log into Skype. Welcome to the current Skyping situations that we've all been having. It's lost my details and can't remember them. Oh, somebody said that earlier, wasn't it, you, Debbie? Oh, dear.
Master, is Ben a Apple user?
I don't think Ben is an Apple user. Is that the issue? That's us Apple people are fine.
I never had this issue.
So he's trying to blame Apple again, Debbie and Mary.
Yes,
isn't
I am.
This?
Any excuse to do so.
No.
Good grief. How expensive is that new phone?
I wonder if he still can log in. Oh, if he might. Yeah, I don't know, Ben. I think Skype's a load of rubbish now, Ben. We'll have to get you a new account, mate. Am I the chance of getting Ben on the show again? I'm gone. Right, let's move on to feedback.
On Apple, I use FaceTime.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Hey, Apple use FaceTime? Oh, yeah, but we can't Skype in on FaceTime.
Yeah, I know.
They'll bring that about soon.
Yeah. Right then. Right, I was going to look into feedback, and before we move on to the feedback that has been sent via the 20 megabytes long-running email address, which is 20mb.feedback@gmail.com, which nobody hardly have. Only the elite listeners to the show actually use that, but they should do it. We're going to look into... What's going to look at? Oh, yes. Facebook. Yes, Facebook. Because Kirby posted a request that people don't bother take any notice of most of the time, but we're going to have a look at it anyway. Let's have a look. Kirby posted... Oh, someone, W. Melrose, has posted a Ready Breck advert photograph. and Jeff Waddle said, God, I miss Ready Breck.
What does that even mean? What is
Ready? What does that mean?
It's a breakfast. It's it was porridge, basically. Porridge.
Yeah.
That's been ground to a fine powder. I seem to remember it being quite delicious, but I don't like it now.
It's tasty, but you could overmix it, and then it tastes a bit weird. It was very odd thing to have.
I used to have loads of sugar on it when I had it, and I used to quite like it like that. But I can't have things with too much sugar.
It's Liz's being porridge mix, okay?
Oh, is that not what we just said, Debbie?
Yes.
Right. That's it. And, oh, I pressed the wrong... there we are, there it is.
Oh, sorry.
Unbelievable. Right. Okay, so Kirby Butler Stone. Where is it then? I can't find it.
It's the picture of the golden.
Oh, here it is. Here it is. Right then. I've just clicked on the wrong bit. No, five comments. There we go. Right then. Three more comments. It says, Laurie Nick said, oh, I'm just making sure it's not too long. Sorry. Keep them long, Laurie, because Debbie loves reading your messages. How come when I studied anthropology, I never got possessed by a 12 million year old skull? Well, did you meet a 12-million-year-old skull? I mean, I had the gold lame Medusa outfit.
LeMay.
What? Oh, LeMay,
gold
sorry.
LeMay.
Okay, it says lame, actually. But anyway. A Medusa outfit and pentagram drawn on the floor and everything. Harumph. Probably no access to Wi-Fi during live feed. Well, I'm glad that's been rectified. But in short, folk horror extra and interdimensional soul-sucking entitles and fruitcake. These are a few of my favourite things. With a little love-faced, sort of love-eyed emoji in there as well. Laurie Nix, Crone Goals. Oh, is this in reference to... Mar Tyler as being a bit of a crone. I think she was a bit too good looking to be a crone. We certainly had a crone in the Telons of Weng Chiang, did we not?
Yes.
Yes. Jeff Waddle said, HB Lovecraft Overload. Laurie Nick said, is that akin to brain freeze caused by soul-sucking enlarged colon monsters? Ew. Jeff Waddle says, the Fendal were straight out of HP, even mentioned in his writings. HP?
H.P. Lovecraft.
All right. Laurie Nick said, Jeff Waddle, I mean the Gestalt, how do you say that? Gestalt.
Gestalt.
Yeah. Thing what is very H.P.L. and all. But where are Fendal mentioned? Quick, before the old ones revoke my H.P.L. Preservation Society membership card. But then so much of Doctor Who in the 60s and 70s was Lovecraftian. Doctor Who can be anything, basically. That's what makes it good, because it can be anything you want it to be. Jeff Waddle says, the taking of Planet 5 and 8th Doctor novel, Time Lords Regenerate into Fendal-type creatures, it's a follow-up to this story. Kirby Bartlett-Stone then said something about The Goon Show, which we're not going to talk about, and then I got the script from Ian Kirk. So there we go. So that's the feedback that we got via that particular feed. I'm now going to check the comment thread.
It's a classic banter between Henry Crone and Minnie Bannister. So.
Okay. Anyway, Ben Shoveler says, I'm on PC, and then he did a one-finger salute at you, Kirby, but you can't see it on this thread, but I know full well that was the case. And then he said, found my details now. Skype saying you're offline. I tell you what, I'll try calling you, Ben, via Skype and see how we get on. I hope he's still got the same old name. Oh dear. Oh, I don't think he has. He must have changed it. Oh no, here it is. Here it is. Right, I've tried adding him. Hopefully he's online. Yes, it's now doing a little trying to call Ben little logo that's just come up on the screen. We'll keep fingers crossed while we continue with this highly slick section of the show. Right then, so, right, we were talking feedback, weren't we? Sorry, I don't know what happened there. Is he on yet? Did it bounce? I think it bounced. Oh, little heart things just come up on the screen. Oh, no, that's for emojis on Skype. Why has Skype got emojis coming up? It's ridiculous. Right, anyway, just let Ben know I did attempt to call him via Skype. Apparently I says I'm offline. How do I make... This is the thing, it turns you offline when you don't want to be statused as offline.
You're online.
Am I?
We can hear you.
Could you?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I called you.
Ah.
How do you change your status on Skype? They changed it, haven't they? How can Skype change their status from being good to crap? They've done it now. Bloody useless rubbish. Rubby thing there. It was perfectly all right. They changed it. It's worse than people that keep changing Facebook every 5 seconds. Right then. Help or settings. There we are. This is interesting for a live podcast, isn't it? Just going.
Yes.
Profile picture. Skype to phone. Your profile. It doesn't say general. Theme, colour, language. No. Calling. How on earth? Surely you should be, when you're online, you should be online. I'll give up and move back. Deb, I've just sent you some blurb from a certain certain person while I try and... Oh, hang on. You carry on. I'm just going to have a chat with Ben.
Okay.
Oh, good grief. Carry on.
Okay.
Carry on.
Mar Tyler, defender of the earth, or Leaky, the most incontinent dog in the world? Yeah. 220 megabytes. The image of the Fendal is, of course, a closely studied critique of cults and the concomitant abuses that accompany them. The well-constructed setup by Dr. Fendelman gives Max headroom to pursue his occult obsession. The reality is, of course, that those that are to benefit off from these practices are hidden, and often all those drawn into the promotion and acting of the activities are always being duped. Okay. It is clearly suggested that new cults can be built upon existing ones, and the dangerous aspects of mythopoetic legendarium represented and made real can be extremely detrimental. Not to be mistaken for the excellent notion of mythopoetic legendarium delineated, and within fiction, of course, which can be excellent. Sorry, my Facebook's bros. It should be noted that whilst some might suggest that the embryonic Fendaline are poorly realised, there is no reason these weird aliens should not actually look like unconvincing and rubbery puppets, mainly varied in size and substance by dodgy CSO effects, and frankly I wouldn't like to meet one in the dark alley. We also learn that Gene Rock from The Faceless Ones went on to try a hand as Thea, a scientist, before being transformed into a gestalt being, but survived to later settle on Lacurtia. Is that how you sell that? Say that?
I don't know.
Wearing just as extraordinary makeup, perhaps to cover Fendaline transformation scarring. All in all, the image of the Fendal is a highly derivative horror tale carried off with aplomb and in a pretty convincing manner by all involved. We seem to be back to a well-developed ensemble cast and a tense, compelling narrative. The Tylers provide some light relief while still being credibly bound into the story. Excellent use of canine here, very much making the most of him by the clear principle of less is more. This is perhaps one episode too short, or one episode too long for no particularly well thought out reason. Next up, Doctor Who and the Attacks of Attacks, or the Plutocrats of Pluto. Those are my thoughts. Alan T. Butcher.
Yes, well done, Debbie. And like I said, I'm still attempting to get Ben's in via Skype. Things I have to put up with. Right then, let's move on to some more feedback. Let's see what we got here. Oh, that's quite interesting.
I have to agree with Alan that the episode is better for the lack of canine.
No, I disagree with that.
I disagree.
And be careful what you say about canine. That's all I can say about that one.
Hello, 20 Lingman Podcast. This is Ian Kirk.
Hey.
I hope all our listeners are safe from the storm.
All three of them.
Image of the Fendal by Chris Boucher. There's going to come a time when I'll be too old for this sort of thing. The plot of a group of humans worshipping or enabling an alien is used a few times in Doctor Who. For instance, the Time Monster. Leela's new outfit seems to be lower cut than the original. The Fendal looked like the nice version of the aliens in The Claws of Axos. I've not seen this story before. It is interesting and well filmed. Bye for now.
Thank you, Ian. Isn't he lovely, everybody?
That was short.
Yeah.
Dear me, I don't know what's going on here. Try me again, Bev says. So I'm going to This is fascinating for our listeners. This. Right,
anyway. Spending the whole episode doing it.
Well, it's anything to get Ben on the show. The saviour of the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast. Oh! That's a different noise. He's back, everyone, and that certainly deserves one of these.
Yeah, I'll definitely go that far.
Hello, Ben.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, Ben.
Hello, Ben.
Oh, hello.
This is my Adam's day, I can tell you that.
Well, it's certainly putting me in a better frame of mind and in a better mood, dare I say.
I could instantly see the smile has almost returned to your face.
I don't quite know what you're implying, but never mind.
We've watched about half of that, and you've been looking really grumpy the whole time.
Well, I've had been put up with Kirby for how long is it now? Let's have a look. 1 hour, 20 minutes and 15 seconds.
Your dog's moving.
No. The dog is behind this. Where is he gone? Oh, I just trod on something. Dog is here. There he is.
It looked like he was. No, the one by the back door.
All you can see from her is she's like a tribble, that dog. I'll just lob this. This is a Monty Python's stress relieving cow. I'll be honest with you, Adam. I thought it was dead. She's moved now. I just lobbed the cow at her. And look how much.
There's another one. Oh, there's two.
Yeah, Magic's. Well, he's just. Never mind. Dogs are great. Right then. So, how are you, Ben?
I'm here. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, I'm here. I'm still alive. I'm getting on with things and ignoring everything to do with Doctor Who. Actually.
You don't want to do that.
Oh, I do.
There's 50 years of history with a man at the helm to think about before we move on to. Oh yeah, we did have Moffat for 4 years, to be fair, but. When I say man, I mean obviously the actor that played the Doctor. But I will say... Yes.
What? It's not real.
But I have quite enjoyed the teasers we've seen of the new series of Doctor Who, so I'm quite excited for what we may or may not even see. I'm quite glad that they're staying away from Daleks for the time being and Cybermen and all that stuff, and they're going to try, hopefully, to do some new things and new imaginings.
Well, it's been quite interesting, really, because I've avoided absolutely everything to do with Doctor Who for about a year now.
You're such a naughty boy.
Because I'm such a child. And once I've made my mind up, it won't be changed back. But last night, I was on, what was I on? I was on Digital Spy, that lovely website, and it had an article about times where Doctor Who went too far. And the biggest one that I remembered was, oh God, it was when Tom Baker got drowned at the end of the episode.
Yes.
And they made a big play on that and how, oh, it was really bad and how Mary Whitehouse complained. And then after that, it was never seen on telly again.
Right.
And that's the only thing I've looked at for the last year.
I thought it was leading to something.
Yeah, is there a new Doctor Who? I don't know.
There is, and we're all very excited about it. I actually have the new Doctor Who on my mantelpiece. I'll just go and fetch.
Well, I should look forward to seeing the new series on a Saturday evening.
Look!
I'll tell you what's going to happen, right? It's going to be on Sunday for a couple of years, and then they'll move it to Monday opposite EastEnders or Coronation Street, and then it'll go to Tuesday. And then it'll be on before Top of the Pops, and then it'll be cancelled.
Well, that gives a good 15 years of future for it, so thank you for that, Ben. That's great.
I think we're going to have it for three more years.
Thank you for that, Kirby.
No, quite honestly, I think they'll just continue it anyway, because it's such a money spinner around the world for them, so they'll be absolutely foolish to
They'll keep it going, but they'll just put less money into it, like they used to do in the 70s.
It's amazing to see, you know, what comes around, isn't it?
But so I'm not worried about it being on Sunday evenings because I'm in for it on Sunday evenings, and a lot of people are home on Sunday evenings. It's quite a good night for it. But I seem to remember the last time they moved it from Saturday, they moved it to midweek when Davison was the Doctor. Mm. And then when Colin Baker became the Doctor, it went back to Saturday evenings, but they were the 40-minute episodes. And then it went to Monday night as well. Yeah, something like that, yeah. After it got its hiatus after that. One rather good Colin Baker series. It was hiatus for 18 months, and then it was put midweek with Sylvester. But yeah, so I'm quite optimistic. I'm quite excited by what we're going to get after waiting so long for some new Doctor Who. I'm hoping it's going to be good.
When's it starting then?
October the 7th, I believe.
Oh, I'm busy that day.
What? So are we. Yeah. We're doing a podcast.
Yeah, what are you going to do? Are you going to sit here and do a live commentary on it? Or
no.
Watch it and then do it
that would
later?
Be good, but unfortunately the Americans can't partake in that live commentary side of things. No, what we're going to do...
Oh, we're close to gone. Being in America and that. Yeah.
Well, we did supposed to say we're sacking the Americans for 10 weeks and then bringing them back in. But...
Oh, I see. We're disposable.
No, that was a suggestion. I didn't say it was going to happen. But no, well, what we're going to do is we're going to... Doctor Who's likely to be on about 5:30, 6 o'clock in the evening. The episode should be out of the way by the time it should record the show at 7.
I bet it's not. I bet it ends up being like 7 or 8 o'clock.
See, you're such a pessimist, aren't you, Deb? Strictly results. That'll be the time to do it. It'll either be before or after the Strictly results.
Well, one way or another, yes. That's a good idea.
Because that's the way they'll get the audience for it.
So. And they don't have to make the Strictly results longer, do they? Like they do Strictly itself.
Well, they don't have to have Strictly on the tour.
No, you like Strictly.
I have to watch it, but, the wife and girls like it, so I can't do a lot about it, really. If it's on, I always have to resort to the football on the laptop.
I like Strictly. I don't like X Factor. I think it's appalling.
Oh, God, I saw it last night for the first time in years. What a...
It's appalling.
Rabbit. It's appalling. I'll tell you the one thing about it is really bad is the editing. There was a bloke on with long hair who was a bit of a rock singer, and he wasn't the best. But the editing on it was absolutely appalling. It made it look like no one was... it bothered that he was on stage. And then suddenly, he sung one note and everyone went crazy. What a load of rubbish. I won't swear.
And don't get me started on Love Island, because unfortunately I quite like that now after watching one series of it. But and that's car crash television.
That's such a bad comment. This line starting to go really dodgy.
Well, I'm sorry. We sure watched it because everybody went on about it and then got hooked on it. But I agree that what
it's not
it
heroin,
is.
Mate. I mean, you can easily
stop. It is when
one was forcing it on. Yeah.
It is when She Who Must Be Obeyed takes a liking to it, and we tend to sit together as a family watching programmes. At that time, and Love Island tends to go on. I do draw a line under the soap operas. I will not watch soap operas unless I'm really haven't got anything else to do. But
Sunday night 8:30, I'm sat in my man cave watching you on my laptop and talking on my mobile phone while the wife's inside.
See, there are worse things to do of a Sunday evening. There was some football on earlier on, which looked particularly boring.
I'm getting called in at the moment to go and watch Dragon's Den.
I love Dragon's Den, and they've taken it off. One of the best programmes on television. It's a disgrace. They're not doing it anymore.
No, you've been fooled by clickbait, sir.
Have I? Is that the one where is that the one where you buy bitcoins? Because they said on Dragon's Den that bitcoins are the best things ever, and all you have to do is invest a load of cash in it. I seem to remember that going around Facebook not so long ago.
Yeah, I don't say anything wrong with that. I'm a massive investor in bitcoins. I live in a box under a bridge, and I'm a massive investor in bitcoins.
Yeah, okay, well, thanks for the advice. So your financial advice here on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
We're not doing much Doctor Who talk, are we?
No.
This is fun, Debbie. Right, point deductive for Debbie for interrupting my random stuff talk with Ben.
It is random stuff. It's good. Yeah. I'll tell you one thing. Yeah. I've been thinking about this recently, and me and you need to have a chat because... I think we've got ways that we can make this podcast make you money, sir.
Now you are talking silly.
No, I'm not. I'm full of it. Some of it's good.
I do get money for it. I don't make money for it. Thanks to our illustrious sponsors.
Well, yes, but your sponsors would love you even more if you do what I have in mind for your podcast, sir.
Do you know, somebody actually once, and this is the other members of the show would not know this, but somebody, I once got an email off somebody said, we love your show. What we'd like to do is we have a platform for podcasts to come on our radio station. And basically all you have to do is supply us with your recording. We might edit it down a bit so it fits into a time slot, blah, 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 blah. That ended up being a load of crap. But not saying that's what you're saying is that a crap, but it was just, that was quite exciting, this notion that I was sent through. And then it turned out to be when they realised that there was something, I think they expected us to, that we had advertisers and stuff like that they were going to be able to make money on, but something, it didn't go to anything. But Anyway, I'll be interested to hear what you have to say.
Yes, well, we'll discuss it at some point.
Indeed. I'm going on the mainland soon, Ben. Going up to Aylesbury to have an assessment with the British Institute of Professional Photography.
Are you?
Yes, and then if I pass the assessment, I can have letters after my name. LBIPP.
I put letters after your name anyway, mate.
No, not non-derogatory letters after my name is what I should have actually said.
I've got many an acronym.
But yeah, that's on the 10th of October, so that'd be quite good fun. But I won't see you, but I'll pass through Farnham. Farnborough.
No, well, you can go through Farnham. I won't be there. I'll live in Farnborough.
It's a similar site. I don't know why I said that. I'm just rambling now.
Pop in and see me.
Unlikely, because I'm going by train.
Well, if you're going on the Aylesbury line, that means you've got to go from Frotherham up to Market Strava.
No, well, the idea is to go from Southampton to Waterloo, from Waterloo to...
Oh, they're real names. I wasn't talking
Aylesbury.
Real name places. I was making places up.
No. Anyway, so, obviously you're going to watch Doctor Who just to see what it's like, aren't you?
I'm really not. I'm obstinate, and
What if we all start reviewing it and you start getting intrigued?
He won't.
How am I going to get intrigued? The only reason I've got this on, I'll be honest with you, I turned this on, I saw it flash up saying that it was live on Facebook, but I was actually also watching an American soccer game.
NSL.
From the American, not the NFL. No. God, no, that's catchball.
The other one. So what's the football league called?
The soccer one.
Soccer league.
The one with, what's his name? Waddy Ronnie, or whatever his name is, who's gone over there. Wayne Rooney, that's it. MLS.
I quite enjoy that. It's quite good fun.
It was the New York Red Bulls. I love the way they don't allow advertising in names in American soccer. against the DC United KFCs. And Wayne Rooney scored a good goal. But Bradley White Phillips scored three, and it ended up 3-3.
I really enjoy those games when they're on, but I just wonder if the Americans get to see them, because they're always on our telly, aren't they?
Yeah, but all of our games are on their telly.
Ah, of course.
They do show a lot of them here, but it's usually, you know, 3 in the morning or times we can't watch.
No, shut up, Kirby.
We like playing games at 3 in the morning. It's the only way we can get 80,000 people into a stadium and not have fights because they're all drunk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But anyway, forgetting the new series of Doctor Who, which you're saying you're not going to watch, I'm very, very, very disappointed. But we are actually, most of the time, we review a classic Doctor Who, and currently in the middle of the Tom Baker era, literally in the middle of it. So that's
literally
your cup of tea. Yes, this is fourth series, isn't it? So the next story will be virtually the halfway point of his tenure as a Doctor.
And what's the next story, then?
Where's the next story? I think you said it was the Underworld.
Sunmakers,
which is essentially K9's first proper outing.
How come you didn't know that anyway, Adam?
Because... I like to get my facts right, and I like to give the others a chance for a bit of input. And you'll find, as an interviewer, that you have to occasionally ask questions of people, just to sort of... What are you laughing at, Debbie?
That is such a crack.
No, it's not.
I've got sneeze coming. Sorry. I'm pulling your leg. It's a great podcast, which I'm very proud to have once been associated with.
By the way, Ben got us mentioned on Radio 2. I'd just like to point that out, but you didn't know that one, did you?
No, you're the second person to mention me on Radio 2 in the last 2 days.
Yes, and I've got.
I applied for a job at the BBC last week and got rejected.
Tell them they don't know what they're talking about.
Well, that's what I said to them.
One of my old work friends, Kevin Fyford's on the radio now. I don't know how he managed to do that. He used to work in the at work somewhere. I can't remember what he used to do. It wasn't anything to do with the radio, as we say. But yes,
3 years. 3 years since I've been on the radio.
Yes,
now.
Wrong.
No, I'm right.
It is wrong.
Every single bloody day. When I'm painting walls, I count every day that I haven't been on the radio.
It's just complete. It shouldn't be that way, should it, Deb?
No.
That's it. Correct answer. You don't get a ding for that one, but...
No, but yeah.
But anyway, I suppose we should get back on to Doctor Who. So don't forget, Ben, next week we're going to be looking at... what was it, Mary?
Sunmakers.
See, this is how you get your co-presenters involved in the show. You'd have to ask some questions from time to time. Right, on the comment thread... well, Ben Shoveler saying try. Oh, that's me saying try again, and then Ben saying try me again, and then Lillian saying it's Ben, and then Laurie Nick saying you've just beaned your triple puppy. Yeah, I think Laurie's implying that Star is in fact a triple. She does look very much like a fat triple. It's got to be said.
He's gorgeous.
What, a fat triple or Star?
No, just Star.
Have you smelt her breath?
Yes, but she's still gorgeous.
Okay, if you say so. No, she's all right. She's just very lazy. She's the laziest dog ever. Anyway, back to Doctor Who. All right. Oh, who's fidgeting?
Me.
Oh. Me. Was it you? Was it? Okay, right. I'm mindful to try, and I do try quite a lot of things on this show, this week's edition via the Trivial Pursuit cards of You Won't Get This One.
I won't.
Where's my cards gone? Where's it?
I'm just trying to remind you if you like that. I'm just trying to
grief. I think I've got a funny bad feeling about this episode.
I replied that they packed them, but I haven't found them anywhere.
Pack what?
My edition of You Won't Get This.
Oh, I see. So you were attempting to cheat. Is that what you're trying
no,
to say?
No, I'm just saying. No.
They aren't indexed in any way that you could.
Exactly.
I have a random selection. Here they are. Random selection for the viewers to see.
Be able to just go, oh, yeah, that card.
So this random selection could result in me asking questions I've already asked before. You know what I was going to do? I was actually going to use the questions from my own quiz book, but I forgot, basically. Right then. So
I've used questions from your quiz book.
Yeah, and then you said they couldn't answer in the questions, they were too hard, Kirby.
That's right.
my finger was hovering over that sound effect from that. Right then, so this is going to be interesting. Right then, Mary, who do you think is going to win this Trivial Pursuit edition of You Won't Get This One?
Me.
Is Ben playing?
Pardon?
Is Ben playing?
Yes, of course he is.
All right, then I pick Ben.
Really? Oh, bless
you. Might get points for comedy reasons. Right, Debbie, who do you think is going to be winning?
Kirby.
Kirby, who do you think is going to be winning?
Debbie.
You fool.
And Ben. Oh, hang on, I've put the wrong one. Ben, who do you think is going to be winning?
You.
No, I don't partake.
He doesn't get points anymore.
No, I've I don't do it anymore. I just read the questions and manipulate things.
In that case, I'd say it would probably most likely be Han Solo of the Millennium Falcon.
One part of the rules is that it has to be somebody that's actually playing the quiz.
Well, unbeknownst to you, Adam, on line two, it's Han Solo of the Millennium Falcon. See, if you'd have done a bit more research before the show instead of farming out the
panel, oh, come on, just come up with an answer, for goodness sake.
Alicia.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Okay, yes. My serious answer will be Kirby, because you're used to it.
He loves the Trivial Pursuits.
If you say so. Yes, right then. Mary, who do you think is going to be last?
Me.
Don't be daft.
Debbie, who do you think is going to be last?
Go on, Debbie.
Mary.
It's all tactics.
I don't like it.
It's all tactics. Right,
oh,
then, Ben.
It's the truth.
Ben, who do you think is going to be last?
What?
I'm asking Ben. Ben, who do you think is going to be last?
Me. And clearly me.
Yeah. That's me.
Kirby.
Spoon holder.
Kirby, who do you think is going to be last?
Ben.
Ooh.
Good boy.
Right, you've then, so it. Everybody still has a joker, surprise, surprise, because we haven't started yet. And the current scores are: in last place with -4 points, it's Debbie. In joint third place with -3 points each, it's Mary and Kirby. And in the lead with no points, it's Ben. Yeah. Right, first question.
This week.
First question is this. Right, then. What name is given to them by Idris Du... Hang on, what the hell does that say?
Who's the question for?
Yeah, who's
Oh, Mary. Sorry, Mary. Sorry. Okay. God, it's a long show this week, isn't it? Right, then. What name given to them by Idris do Amy and Rory give to their perfume to attract the doctor's attention? You won't get this one.
Well, it's a guess.
Yeah.
Chirpicor?
Oh.
Yeah.
Ben, don't forget we've got jokers to play, otherwise he takes
And it. If I say you won't get this one, and you get it, yeah. You get double points. So well done, Mary. And you should have played your joke. Mary, you should have played your joke. I know you said it was a guess, but if you had played your joker, you would have got 8 points for that one.
Sure I had the
Mary will not play her joker unless she's sure of the answer.
Then she probably won't play her joker then. Right then, next question goes to Debbie.
Yes?
What was the name of Dorian Moldavar's bar?
Who?
Dorian Moldavar, friend of the show, Simon Fischerbecker, played Dorian Moldavar. He's blue and fat.
No idea, sorry.
Oh, we could have played, let me play the whole of my countdown tune.
Oh, sorry. I'll do that next time.
Right, yeah, nope. Anybody?
Nope.
You've decided for everybody it's no, is it then, Kirby? Okay, so the answer, therefore, is Moldavarium.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
No, it wasn't for heaven's sake, it was Moldavarium. 2 points have gone into the bonus pot. Ben, this is your question.
Yeah, I'll go on then.
In A Christmas Carol, what traditional festive song draws the smell of... Sorry, I can't read that. The smell... What the hell is... Sorry, my glasses aren't quite what they're cracked up to be. I'll do that again. Right. In A Christmas Carol, what traditional festive song draws the small fish from the clouds as its music resonated with fog crystals? Bloody mouthful.
Silent Night.
Might be surprised to hear this, but... Anybody? Anybody?
Was it I Believe in a Thing Called Love by The Darkness?
Nope.
Just a step in
Well, I'm going to count your silence as...
Mary leaving on a jet plane?
No, it wasn't. It was Ding Dong Merrily on High.
Well, wow. Choose you, sir.
Okay. So there's now 4 points in the bonus spot and a question for Kirby.
Master.
Should we just do this? No, we won't. Come back. Yeah, let's read the question first. Oh, that's woke the dog. Hang on. The dog, when the bell went off, the dog woke up and a cardboard box fell on him. So. Right then. What lunar landing craft launched in July 1969 was carried into space by a Saturn V rocket?
Oh, for God's
sake. Joker, Apollo 11?
Oh, man.
Oh, man, indeed, yes. Right, there's 4 points, as I said, in the bonus pot for this question. Now, remember, anybody can pipe up. I know, that'll be good. Right, it's this. What era does, and that's era, not era, as Americans can't say the word era properly. It's era as a mistake, yes? What era does the Professor Zero Multiform make when he takes on the form of Barney Collins and Bosley the dog?
I know.
Oh, go on then, Kirby.
It mixes up which one barks and which one talks.
Is the correct answer. Surprise, surprise.
I heard words, but they made no sense. Okay. Right. I knew the words, but in that order, there's nothing.
So as we finally get to the end of the first round of questionings, the scores are at the moment in last place with -4 points. It's Debbie.
Yay!
In third place with no points, it's Ben. In second place with 1 point, it's Mary. And then the lead with 5 points is Kirby. Right, next question goes to Mary. Which pop group is Tom Fletcher, who supported Harry Saxon's bid to be Prime Minister, a member of?
I don't know the British groups, so I don't know.
Oh, you don't know? Okay, so we're going to do this. And Debbie said I know first, even though Ben said Bing. Go on then, Debbie.
Austin.
Love it when they.
I'd like to correct you there and say McFly.
No, I'm going to give Ben a point for that because that was appallingly bad.
For God's sake!
No, it was definitely McFly.
I've never heard of any of them.
Oh, shut up, Kirby. McFly. Should we get educated in crap British pop bands from the
1990s? Well, I'm not American, but British groups.
Right, so yes, bad luck, Debbie. I love the way she was so sure because it's completely wrong. Right, then, so who was that question originally for? Mary, wasn't it? Right, then, so this is for Debbie.
Yes.
Who created the painting The Pandorica Opens, the work of art that it made its way across the universe to the 11th Doctor?
I know, go if on. She
doesn't. Go on then, Debbie.
Well, I don't know.
Oh, hang on, so we can play this. And Mary knows.
Isn't it? Of course, we say Van Gogh, but it's... You say Van Gogh.
Right, unfortunately you said it completely wrong, so you don't get any points. No, you don't. I'm joking. Yes, of course it was Vincent Van Gogh.
That was my guess, but I wasn't
I'll
sure.
I'll be quiet. That was your guess.
I've got a poster of it over here.
You don't get any points for that, Kirby. No
I put it on a blanket.
No points for being a smart ass in this game. Right, then, next
I'll
question
put
goes
it on
to
Google.
Ben's question.
Yeah.
Right. When Rory tried to infiltrate Rosanna Culveri's school by passing Amy off as his sister, what king did he say she had an excellent reference from?
Can you read the question again?
Oh, for God's sake. When Rory tried to infiltrate Rosanna Culveri's school by passing Amy off as his sister, what king did he say she had an excellent reference from? Oh, just dropped the card.
Is an English king?
I'm not giving you any further clues. But no,
well,
it's not.
I think you should. I mean, you
no, know, it's not an English king. So not an English king, no.
Not an English king?
No.
I think I might hazard a guess.
Well, let Ben have a go.
Good King Wenceslas.
That's a good guess, though.
Thank you very
Not
much.
Not good enough. Right then, Debbie.
Was it Louis XIV?
Ah.
Oh,
no. It was the King of Sweden. Right then, Kirby.
I think it would be a Fisher King.
Shut up. Kirby. Kirby.
Not me.
Yeah, you. Right. In Partners in Crime, how did the adipose children leave Haringey resident? I'm saying this like William Shatner should read a question. I'll do that again. In Partners in Crime, how did the adipose children...
In Partners in Crime,
how did... You should play the game Shatner.
Let me read the question out. In Partners in Crime, how did the adipose children leave Haringey resident Roger Davies house every morning at 1:10 a.m.
via the cat flap.
Oh yeah.
I'll go on and I'll give you that one, even though there was a longer answer on my card.
I don't think actually that's right. It should be an adipose flap, surely.
Ah, but no. The actual full answer.
What's your longer answer?
The cat flap. He even complained to Watchdog about his burglar alarm, so you would have got extra points for that. Okay, right, so next question. Oh, it was your question, wasn't it, Kirby? Got it right. So there's 5 points in the bonus pot. 5 points. So if you haven't played your Joker, that's Mary, Debbie, Ben. If you haven't played your Joker, this is the time to play it. What is the name of the house haunted by the crooked man that the Doctor and Clara visit in 1974? Oh, God, you're not going to get that one. Good, right. No, the answer was Caliburn House. So there's still 5 points in the bonus.
Right, we wouldn't have got that
no,
one.
No,
yeah, I have no idea. Do I get
a point for that? Right, the next question goes to Mary. What security service did Margaret Blaine work for before she I can't see, there's a shadow over the question. Before she was used by the Slitheen. So what security service did Margaret Blaine work for before she was used by the Slitheen?
I'm going to call shotgun on that one.
Yeah.
Don't have a clue.
Does that mean you know the answer?
No, it means I've got an educated guess.
I'll go and have an educated guess. Hang on, whose question is this? Mary. Right, so Mary doesn't know, so we'll carry on. And Ben's going to have an educated guess.
G4.
And not the best of educated guesses.
I didn't say I was highly educated.
No, the answer was MI5.
I was going to suggest that.
Oh, you should have jumped in then. Right then, Debbie.
Yeah.
Who hosted the 2013 TV special The Next Doctor, where the actor Peter Capaldi was named as the 12th Doctor?
No idea.
All right, well then we'd play this. And we hope that Ben can actually get it right this time. Go on, Ben.
And I'm going to play my joker on this one.
Go on, then.
Zoe Ball.
It's a shame.
He's some generic BBC presenter. There you go.
He is the worst. He's just useless. But yeah, BBC give her work because her dad was good.
Yeah, her dad was phenomenal.
The BBC will give her work, but they won't give someone talent.
Yeah, it's wrong, isn't it? That's like I said before. Right then.
How many points am I on now?
I'll tell you in a minute. We're going to do a score update. Right then, in last place with minus 4 points, it's Debbie. In third place with 2 points, it's Mary. In second place with 3 points, it's Ben. And in the lead with 7 points, it's Kirby. And there, of course, are 8 points in the bonus pot.
How do we win these bonus questions points?
This is a bonus question now.
All right. Can you not have made it the one I just got right?
No. Right then, what?
Well, I mind if it was.
Pardon?
I was just asking anyone else if they minded if that was the bonus question.
They would, yes, because they are just as competitive as me. Right then, so this is for 8 points, a bonus pot question. What age was the master when he was forced to stare into the untempered schism?
Ben got this, yeah.
Go on,
11.
Yeah.
Pardon?
I've got 11.
Oh, was that a guess?
Yeah. 12.
I think I know.
13.
Go on then, Kirby.
9, 8, 7, 6.
Ooh. 8, 5, or 3. I'll give Kirby half of the bonus pop because it was a second guess. So that's 4 points to Kirby, and there's now
that
4 points
get 8 of the
in
bonus
the bonus pop.
Pop.
We'll keep that rolling over for the next round. Right then, so Mary.
Yes.
What was the name of Edwin Bracewell's old flame who set out to seek after helping the Doctor defeat the Daleks? Who he set out to seek? Sorry. What was the name of Edwin Bracewell's old flame who he set out to seek after helping the Doctor defeat the Daleks? The answer... Oh, God, you won't get this one.
Yeah, I certainly won't.
I won't either.
Me neither.
Okay, well, the answer, rather boringly, was Dorabella.
Oh, fair enough.
Mm. Right then.
Worth it.
Indeed. Right, Debbie.
Yes.
In Midnight... What was Dee Dee writing a thesis about?
Oh, no. I have no idea.
All right, anybody?
Yeah, give me a sec. That's her thesis.
Hey? No. And the answer... was the Lost Moon of Poosh.
Oh,
oh really?
Yes, it was.
I remember that.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember that.
That's why I didn't get it.
Yeah, right. Ben, your question.
Okay.
The 11th Doctor...
It's really slow, by the way, in the chat.
Which is a good thing. Right then, 11th Doctor nicknames River Song Mrs. Robinson after a character in which 1967 movie?
Oh, for God's sake.
The graduate.
Yeah. Why can't I get questions
Master?
Like that?
Yeah,
no, it's just random.
And Master?
Just, yes, Kirby.
You ought to have a follow-up question what the rest of their nicknames were.
Kirby, shut up. Right then. Be quiet. Right, Kirby, your question.
Master?
What are the rest of them? I'm going to say. Right. What creature's brain is implanted inside the Peking homunculus?
A pig.
I haven't finished the question yet.
Right.
A pig.
Oh. Would it be a pig, Adam?
Right then, bonus pot, 8 points for this question. Which evolutionary biologist, famous for his book The God Delusion, appeared in The Stolen Earth as himself?
I think I know his name.
Go on,
Richard Dawkins.
Hey!
Hey! I was going to say... Oh,
Master.
Oh.
Sorry, I got bored.
Master. I was going to play my Joker. I'm
oh, sure. Never mind, Deb. That's the way it goes. Right then, who, apparently Kirby says something. Yes?
Master?
Yes?
And do you know who he was married to at the time that he was on that episode?
Oh, God. No.
Lala Ward.
Hey. Right then.
They divorced a couple of years ago.
How fascinating for them. Right then, last card.
He was also...
Yay.
Damn it, I nearly got my point.
I'll stop moaning, Deb.
1941. He was... this is all off the top of my head. He went to the University of Oxford, where he got an MA and a Dr. Phil.
Yes, no extra points. Right then. Yeah, thank you, Ben. Right then. Mary, your question. Which doctor declared after blowing up a Dalek, "For a man who abhors violence, I took great satisfaction in doing that"? Which doctor said that?
Which doctor? I'm going to say the...
No, not which doctor.
Don't
not
forget, which. You have got still got a Joker to play, Mary.
Well, but I don't... this was a wild guess at best.
Well, you might as well play. There's only 6 questions left in the game.
All right, I'll play my Joker.
Yeah.
The 12th Doctor.
No, it wasn't 12. Anybody?
Was it the 8th?
Oh, good grief. No, it was John Pertwee, the 3rd Doctor in Day of the Daleks, for goodness sake. What a man are you all?
Daleks.
Bad luck, Marina. I thought you were going to get that one too. That's why I encouraged you to play your Joker. Right then, Debbie, you've got to play yours as well.
Yeah, I know. Got nothing to lose.
Okay. In what period of history is the Time Warrior in which the Sontarans make their debut set? Is it? And I've got multiple. Do you need the multiple choice?
I was going to say medieval period, but obviously that's... Yes! And I played my Joker.
She played a Joker as well. Wow, that's amazing. Right, okay. Well, at least all the Jokers are out of the way, and I've just dropped the card again. Right then, next question goes to Ben. Complete the 2006 story title, The Something Pit.
Titan.
Correct. Kirby.
Master.
Oh, God. Right then. Rula Lenska guest starred in The Resurrection of the Daleks, but in which year did she enter the Celebrity Big Brother house?
Oh,
God. I haven't the foggiest.
Well, you've got a choice of years.
Okay.
Right. 2006, 2008, 2009, or 2000?
I'm calling shotgun on this.
Okay.
2000.
Go on then, Ben.
2006.
Is the correct answer. All right, so that would be... And the 5 points now going to the bonus spot. For this question, last question is a bonus pot question. Yeah. Right, ready? What villains hail from the planet Mondas, which...
Ben.
Yeah, go on then, Ben.
What villains hail from the planet Mondas, did
yes.
you say?
Yes,
yes. Like, it was,
I know.
The,
yeah.
I know.
The line was a little bit, funny, so I'm not sure if you said Mondas or Mondar.
I didn't actually finish the question. It was
the Cybermen, isn't it? So.
It was indeed the Cybermen. I was just about to read the rest of the question, which was long ago knocked out of our solar system. So, yes, indeed, it was.
Oh, Pluto, then.
Right, so the final final scores after the quiz section of the show.
Oh, that was brilliant.
Well, I'm glad you thought it was brilliant. Right, then. Mary predicted... the scores at the moment, sorry. In last place, with no points, it's Debbie.
Yay!
In third place with 2 points is Mary. In second place with 13 points is Kirby. And in the lead with 21 points is Ben. How the hell did that happen? Unbelievable. Right then.
Did I say or did I say?
Mary predicted Ben to win and herself to be at the bottom. Debbie predicted Kirby to win and Mary to be at the bottom. So unfortunately, but that's the side of that, Debbie, is even though you got the Mary to be at the bottom, double of nothing, unfortunately, is... well, it's nothing, I'm afraid. Right, Ben predicted Kirby to win and Ben to be at the bottom. Kirby predicted Debbie to win and Ben to be at the bottom. So the final scores of this week's You Won't Get This One are in last place with no points. Debbie in third place with 8 points. Mary in second place with 13 points. Kirby. But the winner this week, and you wouldn't believe it, would you? Yes, it's Ben.
Yay, well done.
I want to say thanks to my mum and dad. A momentous moment in my life. I'd like to thank Google for being here and it really, yes, it has, okay, yeah, right. I can't be bothered.
Well, congratulations, Ben. I'm sure when Kirby looks back through the history of the 20 Megabyte Doc 2 podcast, which he does at a regular event, because he's got the time and I haven't, he will find that's probably the first time you've ever won the quiz. Right then.
Oh, I can check.
Actually, I have not updated all the winners yet.
Okay, right then. Back to the...
I did just update the spreadsheet for this week.
Yes, thank you, Kirby. Back to the comment thread on the Facebook Live.
My name and heat.
Laurie Nix. Oh, Carl Jones joined. And then Laurie Nix said 2006. And then she says, why do I know that? And then she says, yay for Ben. And then Terry Miles says, well done, Ben. Now, when I've I haven't won the quiz for a long time. I haven't actually partaken because Deb can't be bothered to write the questions. But what? Nobody else. Well, I think Mary occasionally gets congratulated when she wins, doesn't she? But there you go.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And then Laurie Nix said, see what happens when you return to the broadcast. I was talking about Ben, of course.
I just get called a smarty pants.
Well, you are.
Well, you are a smarty pants.
You are.
Okay, this adventure, normally in the programme, we move on to Doctor Who news. So that's exactly what we're going to do. Now, the first headline that's appeared on the thread is a very sad bit of news, that Xenia Merton has passed away. Now, she was... well, we did Marco Polo not so long ago. It was actually about 3 years ago. But she played Ping Cho in Marco Polo. She's a very established British actress. And very sad. Very sad news that she's gone. She was only 72. There's nothing, not of an age these days. Christopher Eccleston, I love the bones of you.
71's an age, 72's
an age. Very good, Ben. Yes, thank you very much.
They're not just numbers, mate.
Yeah, right.
They mean more than that. Anyway.
I mean, it's quite young for these days.
I'm going to have to bid you all farewell, I'm afraid.
Well, just when I'm getting to the interesting bit, how dare you?
What do you mean the interesting bit? The interesting bit's been the last half hour, though. That bit's going to win awards, mate.
I highly doubt
just
that.
Just like I did. I shall wait for my my Doctor Who 20 Megabyte podcast checkbook and pen to come through the post. Sorry, Americans, that means nothing to you. But it's
Our theme tune, ironically, Ben, the theme tune to You Won't Get This One is from the American version of Blankety Blank.
Yep. Oh, really?
Mm.
Oh, stick up my nose. And so anyway, it's been an absolute blast. Oh, the wife's now texting me to tell me to get started. So I better obey her who must be obeyed.
Yes, that'd be my wife, I'm afraid.
It's been a blast. It's been very nice catching up with everyone, and I shall do it again at some point and a random time when nobody knows. Which in the Doctor Who world will probably be next week.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
I can check to see when the last time Ron was.
Oh, it's probably on one of our anniversary shows.
It's been a long, long
85 episodes ago.
But anyway, yes, love to you all.
Yes.
And enjoy the new series. I'll be watching football.
Fair enough.
Or Socha, as you Americans call it.
Yeah, thank you, Ben. Nice to hear from you.
Bye bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye bye.
Bye.
How do I turn this thing on? I don't like any of those people. Doctor Who, hate it.
It's all right. Anyway, back to the news. Simon & Simon UK to publish Christopher Eccleston's memoir, detailing the Ninth Doctor's acting career, as well as the impact on of dementia on his family. That sounds quite interesting, actually. The cover of the book is appallingly bad, but as a piece of literature, that does sound really, really interesting. Lovett Bickford has passed away at the age of 76, and he directed The Leisure Hive. Yes, Kirby?
Not counting the 300th episode, which was a compilation, unless we brought him in live. Last time Ben was on was in November 2015.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, that's Deb's fault. Anyway, Dwas fundraising update. As previously reported, the Doctor Who Appreciation Society is raising money to pay for a blue plaque to honour First Doctor William Hartnell. Now, people in Great Britain...
I'm surprised he hasn't got one already.
No, so am I. But people in Great Britain, tea was drunk too quick, will have seen a really, really cool TV series about the Carry On films that was done over three episodes, with Martin Clunes being the narrator on it, funny enough. And it was lovely because, obviously, episode one was all about the early days of the Carry-Ons, and William Hartnell was indeed in the first Carry-On film. So
yeah, it was quite
nice to see. So, yeah. Next one.
Carry-On Sergeant, isn't it?
Indeed, yes. Doctor Who Red Carpet Experience. The BBC is offering fans a chance to see Newcastle Doctor Who in a special event being held in Sheffield. Why Sheffield? It's a really weird place to random place to do this, but yes, that's what they're going to do. What else we got here? Peter Benson has passed away at the age of 75. He played Boar, one of the Varney, in the 1983 story Terminus. And then that's back to what we saw last time. So that leaves us with one more thing to do. Anybody guess what it is?
Oh, mention our sponsors. Oh,
well done, Debbie. Don't get any points for that, but yes. Right, so whowon.co.uk, and Christmas is coming. I'm sorry to say this, but it is. Because
Hooray!
Deb has already bought the first Christmas present last week.
I bought mine in January.
Did you? So if you want to buy some Christmas presents for your loved Doctor Who fan, and bear in mind, listeners to the show, if you want to come to Island Con, whowon will be at Island Con. So
Hooray!
You can actually see them and buy stuff off them face to face.
Oh, God, I better make sure I've got a decent wage.
And I bet they won't even give me credit for that, because I did actually arrange it, but they're going to probably not give me any credit for that. In fact, they probably won't even give me any credit for the fact that it's at Cowes Enterprise College, because that was my idea as well. In fact, we got a Doctor Who zone out of that, didn't we? Right then, yes.
Yes, we did.
So I did actually suggest to Ben that we do some screenings, and as soon as I said that, he said, oh, let's get some more Doctor Who guests, because obviously Alistair Pearson's pulled out, so sad news there. He's decided not to do it.
That's what she said.
Kirby.
So, yeah, no Alistair, but none of the Doctor Who celebrities.
The screening idea was good, because when we went to the Doctor Who festival...
There was a little tent, wasn't there?
They had this tent thing, didn't they? Yeah, it was brilliant.
I have a tent that's inflatable that I could go up indoors, but I'm not too sure I want members of the public going in there and farting and stuff. maybe if I could hire one. I don't want people stinking out my tent. It's my tent. but ideally, that would be ideal, because it's an inflatable tent. Put it up, people go in, watch Doctor Who. And it's big enough for the purpose, because I've got about three or four people that want to do that anyway. But yeah, that was something I was considering. I might put it by Ben again a bit nearer the time. Just do some screenings, and Deb can do some quizzes on the Saturday when I'm not there, because I'm shooting a wedding. But I'll leave that one with you, Deb, because you seem to like writing quiz questions.
I can give you lots of quiz stuff.
I'll be quiet,
yeah,
you.
Great. I was going to see what we were going to be doing.
Anything like that. I'll just sort of do stuff. And it's a zone for Doctor Who. So if you want to buy your loved one a sonic screwdriver that looks a bit rude, that's £14.99, and it's on pre-order at the moment. And so get it now, so as who one can send it to you in time to give it to your loved one.
You know what I forgot to say?
I don't care. I go on then, what?
Is that who won that
card?
Yes, I wondered why you hadn't said that. I was
looking up something.
Uh-huh. Were you? Doctor Who Magazine 529 is out. Oh, no, it's a book. Oh, no, it's a magazine. And it's confusing. It's a DW Books, 529 book paperback. It's just a magazine at the end of the day. It's a Doctor Who magazine with that beautiful sort of cartoon-style artwork of the Doctor and her companions on the front page. All that can be bought from whowon.co.uk, along with Target books, CDs, DVDs, toys, and all sorts of stuff. So yeah, and lavazi.co.uk. now's the time to get yourself or your Doctor Who fan a Tom Baker style fourth Doctor scarf.
Are they coming to Island Con, or is
no,
it?
No, they are not. But they, you know, if we keep on, they might come the following year. You never know. I did say to Meninda that it's going to be big. It, you know, it's probably one of the biggest conventions.
As long as no more stars pull out.
So what I'm here? Well, it's still big. You've got loads of people there, so don't worry about stars. We're going to be there anyway. So what are you going on about?
That's true. Yeah, we'll save it.
Yeah. So yes, Sherlock, Star Trek, Doctor Who, all garments in relation to fandom of those series, plus normal knitted things that aren't related to them. So go to lavazzi.co.uk to find some lovely stuff. So that rather concludes the sponsor side of things. We've got one more comment. No, we don't know anymore, because Kirby Bartlett Sloan apparently has joined the viewership, which is a bit weird. So next week we're going to be looking at Sunmakers, apparently.
Yes.
And, that's quite a political story, I seem to remember. And we have reviewed it.
That's Louise Jameson's favourite story.
It is?
Why?
She's not seen it. She told us that when during the surprise interview.
Debbie wasn't with us then.
But Deb, you should listen
to that episode. Then, in those days, we had quite short episodes. So you should dig that one out and have a listen to it, because Louise was rather fab on it, and Ben basically took over the show and just interviewed her and was brilliant. And it was really
fun. Because I was kind of shell-shocked. Yeah. What?
And here's our guest, Louise Jameson. Oh, my. And Ben just took over.
it
was really, really funny.
It
was funny.
A bit starstruck, eh? Oh, dear.
Yeah. Yeah, but that was a great show.
It's like me and Brian Hallahan.
So, I thought the dog was throwing up then. She's just snoring. So, right then. So, I'm just going to check that I am actually nothing else on next Sunday. Oh, I haven't. Woohoo! So there we are. Next Sunday, four-part story. It's, the Sunmakers.
Calendar.
Yeah. Don't matter whether you're checking the calendar. We're doing it next Sunday. So, it's a very long show. Sorry for the people that have managed to stay with us for the last 2 hours and 10 minutes. So thank you so much for doing so. It's not our longest. I did notice that the timing on our last show is actually exactly the same length as a previous episode of the show. I don't know which one, but that was quite a coincidence. But, thank you for persevering with us once again. God knows why you would want to do a thing like that. But we will be back again next week. It's because it's fun. It's fun, apparently, Kirby says. Well, you can guarantee if Kirby says it's fun, it isn't. But anyway... keep with your Doctor Who. Watch us and listen to us next week. Why do I do this show?
Too much tea, Adam. Too much tea.
No, one cup. I actually do need a wee, funny enough. Thank you for listening to the show. See you again next time. Goodbye.
Bye, everyone.
Goodbye, fancy pants.
20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production, sponsored by whowon.co.uk and lavazi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the British Broadcasting Corporation. No copyright infringement intended.